Now boarding for Rebuild of Joycast, your weekly destination for anime, manga, and more.
I think we should start on a moment of silence. Yeah, I'm Val, so as you were mentioning right before we start recording, for once we're kind of on the precipice of a story for once, even though the show comes out on Monday, so it'll already be old news by then. But as we're recording, we have just gotten the news that the president of Mexico, the one of the goats of all manga, Akira Toriyama, has sadly passed away. Looks like an aneurysm of some sort in the brain. They call a like a dural hematoma or something. That's just a fancy way of saying a brain bleed. Which comes from age, lots of things. No need to speculate on it. The man was 68, I believe.
That kind of surprised me, actually. I honestly thought he was older.
Me too. But here's the thing. You thought he was older, but you also thought the man was, like, immortal. Like, he was just as the man was like, I thought the man was in his 70s for the past like 20 years. Like, I felt like he was just his overhead, just always existing. And my God, like, what can you really say? The man, he has touched every ounce of fiction in some direct or indirect way.
It's true.
What we experience today, like, influenced something. Even I can go back and think about my time, not just watching the show. But when I was a kid, like, I was just kind of reminiscing today when thinking about it. I remember when I was a kid, Scholastic Book Fair. I got that one, How to Draw Dragon Ball, with the little, like, infrared blue mirror. I'm sure I'm unlocking a memory for some of our listeners, if they're not too young, where you put it side by side with a booklet so you can kind of trace it on one side where the mirror image, like, goes on the other side of your drawing pad. And you kind of mirror draw it. Like, that's how I learned to draw anime characters. Like, it's insane, the man's reach.
I remember, I think my first interaction with Dragon Ball Z, I was at a friend's house, and they put on Cartoon Network, and I didn't have cable for the longest time, or anything like that, and I was so taken aback by, like, how cool everything looked. There was blood, and violence, and...
For our age group, that Toonami block just, like, hit... It was the right time demographic.
I think it was the Cell Saga, and it was all the Cell Juniors fighting the Z Fighters. And I was like, why is everyone just standing around and stuff? And just, like, you know... But it was cool, though. It was cool. I think Android... I remember being confused. I was like, what's with this seven head just talking to this kid? Who's, like, my age, so immediately I'm like, oh, wow, he's the one fighting? He's cool. Like, Gohan, I think, was my favorite character for, like, a long time, when I was a little kid, in watching the Cell Saga, and,
You can tell, like, the Cell Saga is the one that hits the majority, like, just a few, because you're a few years younger than me, a few years younger, and it's funny, because you can trace that to the Toonami broadcast and the merchandising, because everyone had that Cell Saga Vegeta action figure.
Yeah.
Like, Vegeta was, like, the most iconic thing about Dragon Ball at that time. But again, the Cell Saga, because for me, again, I'm older, we had the Saiyan Saga, the fucking ocean dub run of that with Chris Drummond as Vegeta with the different voices. Because that was my earliest experience watching Dragon Ball. And not only that, but at the same time, they start simulcasting Dragon Ball and going, hey, did you know there was a whole series before this? And that just blew my mind. Like, I'm just discovering Dragon Ball Z, and at the same time, like, oh no, there's two series. Imagine, like, what do kids grow up with now? Imagine growing up with Jujutsu Kaisen or My Hero Academia and going, oh yeah, Mitch, there's another show before this. So you're experiencing your favorite franchise for the first time in two different capacities. That's mind-blowing.
It's more crazy because, like, the way that anime is obviously broadcasted in the West now, it's completely different. Like, I think for a lot of us, the Cell Saga might have been all that many people in their childhoods might have seen if they didn't have regular access to cable.
Like, yeah, that's what I wonder, because, again, because, I mean, I had cable, but you were a kid who did not have cable, so, like... How'd you get this?
I think eventually I probably just discovered online streaming and everything and just watched.
Again,
it
yeah,
because
you're a little
dubs.
Bit older, so yeah, so you could download, you could, I mean, I say BearShare, fucking Napster, shit like that, because yeah, I remember having access to that, but for me, not only just the broadcast, but remember, they never aired GT, at least not in my childhood.
Yeah, they aired GT here for me, actually. It was when I
abroad, but not in North America.
When I finally got cable, I was probably like 6 or something when I first saw it. It was probably like when I was like 9 or 10 when I think we got cable. I could watch those things semi-regularly. Yeah, I remember watching GT and actually really, really enjoying it. I liked the main theme. I remember watching like the ending and being like, oh, that's the end of Dragon Ball Z. And then it fucking came back.
But yeah, but GT, I don't, someone might have to correct me on that, but I don't think GT ever had a proper Western run, at least not in, like, you know, the initial hype of things.
I watched it on TV all the way to the end. Like, I
yeah, but I know out in Europe and anywhere else, I know GT definitely showed up at. Hmm. But in America, for some reason, no. So that's where that's how I understand how other people who may have not had the best cable or broadcast experience got it through the freaking DVDs. I remember buying the hell of the DVDs of GT.
It's, you know, I think for me, Dragon Ball Z did really all end at GT, and I know people are probably going to say, like, oh, well, actually, GT somehow, like, works into the timeline or something, or, I don't know, it's alternate universe crap and everything, but, like, I posted, like, you know, my little, you know, goodbye Akira Toriyama, which, you know, I feel kind of sometimes a bit like, I've criticized the man for literally years of my life. Probably.
I'm especially critical.
Oh yeah, I have probably criticized the man's work at this stage longer in my life than I did as a kid loving the show. Like genuinely.
Yeah, same. No. Agreed. Same.
But I think I am simply someone who naturally grew out of it. Like, I think Dragon Ball is still entertaining, but I look at Dragon Ball Z and I'm kind of like, it's cool. But I don't find anything, like, truly substantial for it.
I think you grow up to appreciate Dragon Ball for what it is. Like, you grow up, like, as a kid, again, it was a mind blow that existed, but if you're a kid, when I was a kid, and any kid, you'd ask, which one do you prefer? I know you prefer Z, because Z just hits your demographic. But yeah, as an adult looking at it, and it's something I've criticized a million times, I just don't think Dragon Ball ever had it never had the intent to ever be a challenging of media. It was iconic, superficial, and that's fine.
It could have been like, you know, some guys like, okay, I've got this story. It's about this world based loosely on Chinese mythology, but there's futuristic stuff and animal people, monsters, demons, just everything that you can name, aliens. That'll come
Dragon Ball Z in particular. I mean, start with Dragon Ball. It was a parody of Journey to the West, and then Dragon Ball evolved into a parody of Western sci-fi. Like, you look at Frieza's transformations, you look at the androids, and it's like, oh, there's Alien, there's Terminator, everyone's named after a vegetable or a piece of lingerie. Like, you can't take, as a kid, you took it very seriously. As an adult, I joke about that with the fans, and I'm not going to do that. Toriyama's death is not an opportunity to admonish the fan base and make fun of them, like I usually do. We're not here to do that today. But Dragon Ball is not a piece of medium to ever take too seriously.
No.
And we all like to look at the Frieza arc and really try to dig into it, but it has a great message, but that's the one. And you see with the fan base, at its worst, has never taken those themes to heart because those themes were never that intentional. Again, because Dragon Ball has always, at its heart, just been a love letter, a loving parody of the fiction that Toriyama fucking adores, and he just brought it to a whole nother level, and through his expression of love through parody, he somehow also completely, like, changed the manga anime landscape at first, and then that had echoes that just completely, we didn't know at the time, but every major, like, creator that we see today has been touched by the Dragon Ball franchise, and we're giving Dragon Ball's flowers. The man has done a million stories. There's freaking, what was it, Sandland and Dr. Sandland. Slump.
Mm-hmm. He did all of the artwork for original Chrono Cross and Dragon Quest.
Dragon Quest, yep.
Obviously maintained that style. I do not know to what degree Akira Toriyama worked on it in more recent releases, but, you know, that is now a staple. His art is just a staple of a lot of...
The creators of Pokemon attribute their original designs to a love of his art style.
Hmm.
So he touches even that. It just, again, the man has in some way, it's just touched every medium.
Yeah, no, he's, he did it right. You know, I don't agree with, like, some of the creative, like, one thing I've always criticized him on, like, him, even, as a storyteller, is the way that he changed and, retconned Bardock, who wasn't even his creation originally, actually, for example.
Yeah.
But it's like, you can tell, and it's something that I do like about him, and it's something I was talking about with my friend this morning, where Dragon Ball could have been a story about, you know, these seven mystical balls, this boy's journey to find them. You know, it could have been, oh, wars have been waged over these things, you know, people die. It could have been like a Full Metal Alchemist, kind of like, this trail is, like, laden with blood, Goku. And if you follow them for, like, your one wish, you'll be, like, wrapped up in this dark, whole, horrible ordeal or something. But no, it's this chill world with some pretty bad stuff going on. But at the heart of every situation in Dragon Ball, there's just this light tone where, like, you know, these guys who can kill you with their tongue ride logs through the air. There's, you know, these mystical towers, and you gotta climb it, and you could die if you fall off it, but guess what? At the top of it's a cute little cat man. And, you know, it's...
You know the best part about all that shit is? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be fucking explained.
No.
It can just be accepted.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's something I think I envy Akira Toriyama almost, because, like, as someone who's, like, trying years to write a story and feel like, I need to explain everything, I need to have, like, these in-depth detailed explanation. Then maybe it all comes down to, like, why, to some degree, I grew out of Akira Toriyama, because I'm like, I want explanations. I want lore. I want, you know, supplemental reading material. I hate that when it comes to, like, media. Do you remember Final Fantasy 15 when that came out? And it's like, you gotta watch a movie and there's a book and then you'll get the whole story. I hate stuff.
I'm not a Final Fantasy guy, but yeah, I take your word for it. There's a lot of supplementary material.
That was a big thing in the marketing. Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z is just, yeah, here you go. Take it at face value.
Yeah, it's its blessing and its curse. It's just, and that extends again. I don't want to make this the Dragon Ball podcast. It's just like, in all of his work, it's so simple, it's effective. And again, we talk about how One Piece is just this singular one thing that has such an epic outreach.
Mm.
But then you just have Toriyama himself. His entire body of work may not be the most memorable. Dragon Ball absolutely is up there. But yeah, it's only one piece of a larger body of work, and all of it together just reaches every corner of the planet, every corner of every piece of media. He has somehow touched it, like, insane. And again, and it's the blessing, the curse, the fact that you go back to it and it's not really deep. Like, again, I you just talk about where you get older, or, and it's not because you get, it's not maturity, it's just you experience more things in life and you change and grow as a person, and you're looking for more meat in your content.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to call it content. Oh, that's such an ugly word. More meat to your fiction. And it's just not there in Toriyama's work. But my gosh, when you're feeling, and I hate saying nostalgic as well, but it's just like, oh, when you want to go back to a simpler time, there's Toriyama to greet you once more. There's just something warm and simplistic of what he does. And regardless of what the story is outside of Dragon Ball, he's always been a comic guy. He's always been very funny. Hmm. And even in his origins, I mean, if you want to talk about the man has always been humble, because his origins were just, he entered a manga contest in a time when manga was not taken seriously. So he entered a manga contest to make a quick buck. And then he entered it and he won it. But then when he got to write more, people said what he wrote sucked, and then he continued writing just to spite those people. And I'm trying to think how long it took. I think he wrote like 10, 20 stories until Dragon Ball came along. Like, just again, the man is a testament to stubbornness, to just keep going, persistence in the realm of entertainment. Just keep going, man. Something will hit eventually. You're not going to get it right the first time.
No.
You're not Oda. Even Oda didn't get it right the first time. All right. I woke up to the news this morning, and I did my little tribute, made my little joke, like da 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 da. But as the day kept going, it really, really started to hit, man. Like oh my god, like it's Toriyama's fault that I don't work in the medical field. Honestly, somewhere in my life, this man's echoes altered my brain chemistry and said, "Yeah, I am trapped in entertainment." Just the way the man approached it.
Mm-hmm.
Insane. Insane the impact he had in so many big and little ways in people's lives.
No, it's crazy. It really is the cultural impact that he had on everything. It's like, I don't know, just this like funny little monkey boy and stuff, and then yeah. All of a sudden, yeah, like, you know, skyrocketed him to so many opportunities working on things like Chrono Trigger, which to this day is even considered one of the greatest RPGs ever created. Just all kinds. I mean, the man did it right. He did it right.
He did it fucking right. But now
I will say though, it's one of those things where, like, you know, I said to my mom this morning, I was like, oh, the guy who created Dragon Ball died. And she was like, oh no, I'm sorry to hear that. I was like, oh, why are you saying sorry to me? I didn't know the man or anything like that. Like,
yeah, there were folks again in the morning where I was a little bit eyebrow raised, like, okay, come on, where people were making it very personal. And I'm like, we didn't personally know that. But then again, I started thinking about that Scholastic Book Fair. Mm. And when I started drawing, and I'm like, oh my fucking god, this man may as well have been a mentor at some point. Like, if we really want to hit it like that, it's like, fuck. No, everyone's right. This man is an important piece of a lot of people's lives.
I mean,
it's crazy.
I've kind of always...
It's dramatic, but it's justifiably so.
I think the only time I've been like noticeably sad for maybe a few hours from a celebrity or some entertainer, a fiction author dying or something is probably Berserk. But I think that lull came from the fact that he hadn't finished his story.
With Akira, it's more than that he hadn't finished his story, but also again, we're talking about a writer.
Explicit
themes and a way that he made his work very personal. You knew the guy, you read his work, you knew that man personally. That's why it hits the way that it does.
It does hit, but I
that man opened himself up, whereas
Akira
Toriyama is just some funny man with a gas mask with a cigar in it, you know.
I am
it's
funny,
like, how did that
I suppose
man make
it
impact
that,
your life?
I'm funny I suppose in that I don't ever feel like I deserve to feel like personally impacted. I don't think
yes.
I can do the whole like I'm crying or, you know, I couldn't read, you know, all that. And people, you feel free to feel and express yourself in any way that you please. I'm just I'm just me, and I'm just a bit neurotic about certain things, I guess. Very that is the thing about me, isn't it, Ivan? I'm funny about very specific things.
Yeah.
Or ways
but no,
about
but your
going
feelings are so warranted, because I woke up that morning feeling the same way. Waking up, my entire feed is acting like Toriyama was like their personal friend that died. I'm like, what the, like, we're being dramatic here. But again, as I let that news digest and started reminiscing about the impact of his work, I'm like, damn it. They're not wrong to feel that way.
Yeah.
Like, because even this is the first time I've really felt that way too. And I can't, and I'm in disbelief. I'm in disbelief that I feel so personal about it. Again, like, kudos to the man. Kudos.
No,
you got someone like me to like, oh my god, I actually can take this personally.
You did it right, man. You just did it right.
Yeah, so now you want to talk about another impact on our lives and our childhoods, like things that altered our brain chemistry. Also
Rooster
this week,
Teeth.
Rooster Teeth, after 21 years, the
it's
writing
really
has been on the
20.
Walls for about 2 years.
It's
but
really, wait, what were they doing before YouTube?
Their own website. These guys, like, invented, like, they were the pioneers of content creation. They had their own website. As a kid, again, when in my preteens, teenage years, I had to download Red vs. Blue directly from their website.
That's how long they've been doing Red vs. Blue?
There was no such thing as video. There was no VOD. There was no, you just watch a video on the computer. You had to download that stuff. You had to download their videos. I had all folders of their work. And my gosh, I hope people have folders of their work still. because out of all the companies, they were shut down because they were at the very end of the day, Rooster Teeth has been under a lot of different ownerships. At the end of the day, they ended up with Warner Brothers. So go figure. But not even go figure. Again, the writing was on the walls. Rooster Teeth has been a bit, even though that there's still been quite the generational hands that were still at play at Rooster Teeth is astounding that some of the OGs were still there. But the place has been radically different, and the place has been radically shaken by a lot of revelations, a lot of controversies. So understandably, a lot of people, including myself, kind of washed our hands of it at the end, but that's not going to stop us from mourning what it was, and also sending our hearts out to the people, the good people still working there who are now suddenly out of a job. But though, we should mention though, because yesterday, this took everybody by surprise. Even the people working there, they did not know until that morning, that meeting, they did not know that they were out of a job. And so we really cannot speculate, but I just, right before this podcast, I was listening to their live stream where they got to explain some things. There's still a lot of things up in the air, a lot of things they do not know, but what, or cannot say, but what they do know as of right now, they're actually still operational for 60 more days. Apparently, they still get to broadcast for 60 more days. So that means what? That means they get to basically celebrate their 22nd anniversary, and then they're gonna shutter. So I guess that's nice, but very bittersweet.
I felt pretty sad.
I'm devastated.
I don't have nearly the connection that you do.
Rooster Teeth, for a lot of us, is the model by way of those of us who go into content creation as YouTubers. A lot of us, like, Rooster Teeth was the model. This is how we learned how to interact with fans. This is how we learned to interact with copyright holders. I don't think Abridging would still be here today if it wasn't for Rooster Teeth to show us, even if most copyright holders in Japan are not as, you know, amicable as Microsoft and et cetera et al. They showed us how to be polite and how to, you know, initiate those conversations. I think it would be a tragedy. It'd be a freaking disaster if we didn't learn from Rooster Teeth first.
Realize how little I actually knew about Rooster Teeth now. Like,
I know everything about Rooster Teeth. Terrifyingly so.
I knew about Achievement Hunters. I didn't watch it. I knew about Red versus Blue. I didn't watch it. I'm not Halo.
I knew about all their ancillaries. Freaking Funhouse, Sugar Pine 7, Cow Chop. I was there for it all.
Cow Chop until was a Rooster Teeth thing? I know about them.
It was Rooster Teeth.
I do not know that much. I'm very hyper-specific on the content I choose to watch on YouTube.
Yeah, and me too. And guess what? There was a time when I watched a lot of content because it was all under the Rooster Teeth umbrella, because that was the company I trusted. Until, understandably, that trust was broken for a lot of people. Like, it is completely understandable why fans walked away from Rooster Teeth in those last couple of years. Because not only were there those controversies, but then they got the additional information that much of Rooster Teeth's history was also very tainted. And it is absolutely fair to have those feelings, but also feel very sad for what's being lost today, to go out to those people. So that's my only really thing to say on that. There's some people who are really dunking hard on Rooster Teeth. And I know people who were directly affected by Rooster Teeth who have not had those harsh sentiments. They're like, yeah, didn't have a good time at Rooster Teeth, but I would not dance on their grave. And you got people fucking dance on their grave like this? Like, guys, come on. The same shit that I said about when Brendan kind of had his issues there. The recent controversy with Jello Apocalypse and Sound Cadence and Discotheque,
not stop me off again.
Yeah, we're not gonna start. Watch your mouths.
I'll say this: there was a whole segment where I got very, very angry. None of it was bad; it was all justified. But
it was very justified your relationship as a voice actor. And I said, as a director, that you have certain privileges. And I say this to guys: the people that I'm watching who are actively dunking have some huge media presence and relationships. And I go, I mean, I can't speak. I'm not as big as you are. Maybe you are invincible, but like, I would watch it. I'd be careful. I'd be careful with your time, because you never know when your time comes, when they find out shit about you, or you're no longer useful to people. Like, just, ooh, watch your mouth, watch your privilege here. Because I have a lot of harsh sentiments, because again, Rooster Teeth is a huge impact on how I approach things, and I felt absolutely fucking betrayed when the controversies came out, and beyond that, when you learn that historically there was problems. Like, I feel betrayed. I still have a lot of harsh feelings about Rooster Teeth, but at the end of the day, I am devastated by the closure. It's an institution. The folks that there are still good folks there. And it sucks. And what else is there to say other than, I've heard that there are still they are finishing up. There's a final season of Red vs. Blue that was already in the works, and it will be the last season. How is it going to be shown? I don't know. I am terrified because it's in Warner Brothers' hands right now, and that's terrifying. Knowing Warner Brothers' relationship with, you think things like Wiley versus Acme and Batgirl would get some kind of streaming release, at like a streaming exclusive release at minimum. And they get deleted for a tax break. What hope does Red vs. Blue have? Ruby seems to be the most valuable piece still in play.
Yeah.
What happens to Ruby? And this is the part that bugs me. I don't want to say much about this, but I know there are some people... There are people who apparently have produced or animated for Ruby who are trying to make an honest bid, to which I say... Is now the time to be saying shit like that? Like, I don't know. These people might, maybe these people do have millions of dollars in the bag to make these bids, but I hope people realize that it feels like the same, and it feels like the same energy, but not the scam. It's not a scam. Because remember when there was that Kickstarter for that anime service? We're like, oh, we're going to kickstart our own anime platform, and then we'll dub it ourselves, and we'll make it accessible. And it's like, those motherfuckers, that's a scam. You don't understand just how expensive even a singular piece of old anime is. Because if it was approachable by a Kickstarter standards, we'd all be doing it. If it genuinely truly was approachable to start a Kickstarter to own a piece of anime, oh my god, I would have started doing that years ago.
We all would.
All the Bridgers would start doing that. We would love to do that. But the way that corporate monopolies work, the way that licensing works, it's impossible.
Legal
and I'm just
tape.
Talking about, I'm just talking about the dubbing rights to stuff. These people want to buy Ruby outright. The passion is appreciated. And again, I might be talking on my ass, and maybe I don't understand what control you think you have and how much money you think you have to approach, but Ruby is bigger than just the show. I think Warner Brothers sees Ruby more for its marketing potential than the show itself. I think the last piece of Ruby media is actually a Justice League crossover that was on HBO Max.
Yes, it is.
Like there's more than just the show, and I don't think you can buy just the show. I think you're woefully underestimating what you are allowed to buy. I don't want to call these people out by name.
To part ways with it, they'll probably just go, screw it, we'll just get other people to do it.
Yeah, and people are like, oh, A24, buy it. Do you really want A24 to buy it? Like, are you just saying that because it's A24? Because they bought Hazbin Hotel, and look how that turned out. Is that really what you want?
Yeah, you know, weirdly, that show, yeah, like, I know, like, the fandom is huge for that show, but I'm surprised how, like, maybe it is the consequence of it being on, like, you know, a paid platform and everything, but I'm surprised how little is, like, I've been hearing about that show now, actually. That's not me, like, dunking, I'm just surprised. The accessibility of the pilot on YouTube, I think, was, like, a massive boon for that, but, like, you know, the instant it goes to a corporate platform and it's, like, you know, your main audience is probably teenagers or maybe even kids and everything. It's strange, like, the effect that it's had on online presence, I suppose, in some ways.
Yeah, but it's just that I think the people who are trying to make an honest... right now is a bad time to shake the bottles, what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm ready to buy Ruby, and it's like, these people are saying it. They've worked on Ruby, so it's like, okay, you know something that I clearly don't, but I feel like the pest... I feel like... Maybe I'm the jackass with the podcast. Okay, I'm telling you right now, I don't know jack shit.
I'm the big.
So I don't know what y'all know. But I feel like y'all are also overextending here, underestimating what exactly you have access to that you think one of the brothers is just going to sell Ruby.
I mean,
no.
It's kind of like, do you remember that anime, Interspecies Reviewer, when that got like one or two episodes of a dub and then they went, yeah, we're not doing
this. Oh, yeah, we made a mistake.
We made a mistake. We didn't realize how inappropriate the it was. I remember, like, if this were the case.
Asleep at the wheel producing.
And you could just, like, you know, sweep it from under them with, like, you know, a couple thousand, 100,000, I don't know, then so many people would have just done that. So many people would have just been like,
And again, even millions, because I'm talking about, like, I think even these people know that it's going to be a couple million at minimum. But I'm saying is, no, it's going to be more than a couple million, because you got to understand that's a whole merchandise franchise with comics and action figures and manga. It's a whole media
anime.
Enterprise of its own. Yeah, and an anime. Like, what exactly do you think you're going to have access to? You think Warner Brothers is going to be like, okay, fine, you can have the show. No? No, they're not going to let you have that. No matter how much you offer. No. What? Again, call me a dick. Call me a dick and say I'm an asshole and I'm fucking wrong. I would love to be wrong about this. But what the fuck do you guys think you're going to do? Honestly. Right now, leave it the fuck be. Obviously, don't let it go. Don't let it die. Demand Warner Brothers continue it or sell it to someone who has a reasonable shot at continuing it, and to which I say, you know, the pessimist to me says, honestly, I think Sony's gonna be one that swipes it up for a cheap buck. Hmm. And I say a cheap buck by their standards. I think Warner Brothers is going to, I think Sony is going to grab Ruby and put it on Crunchyroll.
I'm really like, I do not know what the deal is with Sony lately. Like, their console division seems to be in like a fucking mess lately, right?
I don't follow video games at all. I feel like whatever is going on with Sony, I feel like has been, like, despite all the, like, I know the layoffs that have been happening, to which I go, I've talked to you about this, like, years ago, the bubble burst of the AAA game. I make those jokes on your tweets. Quadruple A gaming, baby! More is, I don't play less for quintuple A gaming. Like, this race to have this graphic fidelity and be these big cinematic experiences, that is not tenable for gaming. It's just not. It's just not. And all these layoffs that are just affecting all of Sony Studios across the board. Guys, you think that wouldn't be affected or getting affected? It's because we keep chasing this fidelity and doing it. And not only just chasing this quality, but doing it in a shorter amount of time with less substance. It just won't work. And I say that I don't know what's going on with Sony because it gets completely overshadowed by Microsoft's incompetence. The fact that now that they have said, okay, we have a big amount announcement to make, and then they do like a podcast, which I think was the reasonable approach for this. When it's not an exciting announcement, it's very serious, so it's like, we're not very interested in exclusives anymore. We're starting to move games over to PC, the same thing that Sony's been doing. I've said this for a million times. What's the point? I get there's a point to Nintendo consoles if they continue to be exclusive to Nintendo, and the fact that they continue to be very innovative and very specific.
Innovative and not super high fidelity. They're more.
They're not chasing the fidelity dragon. Yeah, they're continuing to make games.
They're more focused on making, like, mechanics, if anything.
Yeah.
And try, like, that kind of thing.
Well, they've always been a toy company first. Again, like, when I unboxed my Switch, I'm like, oh my god, this is a fucking toy. They always chase that, and that seems to work for them.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a disaster with the Wii U, but then again with the Switch, it's like, here we go.
I was playing Wii
but
U the other day.
It's just
freaking Twilight Princess on it.
We have reached the point, again, with consoles. You can't reasonably hand a console to the general consumer anymore unless you are selling it at a loss. Consoles are a fucking loss now. They've been for the longest time, but now even more so as you continue to chase these huge trying to put the highest graphic processor in the smallest package. I'm telling you right now, if Microsoft wants to win again,
last for like 8 years. Like,
all Microsoft has to do.
They came out with PlayStation 5, right? They came out and they were like, PlayStation 5's already nearing the end of its freaking life cycle. It's like,
it's ending the second half of its life cycle.
That's the thing. I don't know.
But game generations are definitely shrinking ever incrementally because again, they keep trying to chase that new high.
I mean, the Xbox 360 and PS3 that lasted as long as it did because I think like we're in a massive global economic fucking spiral essentially. Like,
yeah, but I'm telling you right now, software is where it's at. They need to stop making consoles. They need to start making games.
Yeah.
They need to start making fucking software.
I mean, good luck.
Microsoft wants
Sony have literally closed down a bunch of their studios, what is it? Japan Studios, one of the best ones. They make
because we gotta have again. They're selling consoles at a loss because we keep chasing this stock shareholder high that a new fucking piece of plastic fucking brings, and it's fucking ridiculous. Microsoft, you want to change the game right now? Make gaming PCs, make consumer accessible gaming PCs. You can do your fucking homework and play fucking Microsoft games on here. They'd fucking win in a heartbeat. It'd be more expensive than a console. But now you're getting a fucking PC. You could play your favorite. You could play fucking Halo and stream it like a streamer.
Hmm.
That's it. That's the fucking solution, motherfucker. And again, maybe I'm a fucking idiot and I don't know anything about gaming because I don't, because I'm not a gaming guy. But only Nintendo has ever in the past decade now justified its presence in having a console. The latest Xbox X Series, whatever the fuck it was. That's a fucking joke. I said it when it was announced. That's the most superficial fucking superfluous fucking piece of hardware I've ever seen. What's the point of it? The games don't look any fucking better. You just did it to fucking push more plastic. And that's what's slowly happening to Sony right now too. This next gen, it's what justifies this? The PS5, the only thing that the PS5 has ever done that's impressive is how much they have almost entirely reduced load screen times. That's impressive.
I don't even know, because
I have to give that to them.
I was really excited for PS5. I was like, wow, the PS4 and was awesome. PS3 was shit.
It hardly has games, but I have to give it to them on that. What's the one thing that justifies its presence? I'm like, fuck, those load times are very fucking fast. That's power, baby. You've demonstrated power on your console. You get that much. But what are you bringing to the table next time if you claim that the PS5 is now in the latter half of its existence? Oh my god, did it ever get started? I feel like they just started getting games this fucking year. I'm still waiting for that game with the robot girl. Remember when they first announced? I'm looking for that. I feel like they shut down that stream just to spite me. That when they were first announcing the game, the first games for the PlayStation 5, and it had this game, and it looked like it was from the creators of Dead Space or whatever, where it was that astronaut with the robot girl, and they launched it to the stratosphere, and then they're hanging out in the moon, fighting fucking robots, and I've never heard a word about this game, ever, and it's been five, going on 6 years now or more?
Pragmata, 3 years ago.
I don't know, but it's not 3 years, it's longer than that.
It says 3 years ago on the PlayStation thing, Pragmata, little...
Let me look this up. I doubt it's Pragmata. There's no fucking way. Pragmata.
I think this was the one.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Pragmata. Okay. Yeah, I'm a dipshit. Eating cock as usual. But... Okay, so it's a Capcom. So the last piece of news we have, it is June of this year. Capcom's... So this is a Capcom game. That pisses me off even more. Because Capcom can be pretty fun sometimes. But it says it's delayed indefinitely. I mean, it was never made. Again, this is the shit about modern games that pisses me off. These are all CGI trailers. They don't make these fucking games. They make CG trailers, and they go, stock soldiers? Huh? Huh? Does that move the tick? It moved the tick. We can make it. Didn't move the tick? We're not making it. And it's such bullshit. Apparently, it was being made on the Resident Evil engine as well. Motherfucker.
I like that engine. Nah, it's,
But no, I actually have not seen that. I haven't actually seen this trailer.
AAA gaming is in a freaking down spiral right now. It is in a...
I'm glad I know the name now. But literally the only thing about the PlayStation 5 that ever caught my interest was Pragmata. Even though I don't like CGI trailers, something about this just blew me the... Something about its energy just caught my special level of autism or something. I don't know. But I didn't know this other trailer was out. I'll have to watch this after the podcast, but... Yeah, I've said it a million times. Modern gaming just pisses me the fuck off. I played Sega Bass Fishing the other... My wife and Ivan Man conspired and got me a Dreamcast for my birthday. And then just only a couple weeks ago, because I've been so busy with the move, I finally got to sat down and play games on it. And I played fucking Sega Bass Fishing. And it was the most fun I had with a video game in fucking forever.
I think people are just going to go back to simpler games, simpler times. Honestly,
I'm telling you right now, the arcade style is where it's at, baby.
We're gonna be in a weird place in terms of media because between Well, I was saying the other freaking week or however long ago it was when I was doing that, like, rant about, like, voice acting and stuff. We got AI on the rise and everything. Companies are probably going to be downsizing a hell of a lot.
Even more than they already are, and it's gonna fucking look like trash!
Yeah, but I think we're also going to be in... I think we're gonna be in a weird place where, like, I think a lot of people are probably just gonna be, like, collaborating to make games. Like, you know, look at Friday Night Funkin', look at a lot of these indie games that are doing really well for themselves. Literally, one of my friend and I's favorite co-op adventure games, Outward, is getting a sequel very soon. It looks freaking awesome. We're looking.
Well, I have Hades 2 to look forward to. Like, again, yeah. Like, indies will continue to fucking rule, and that's just where it's all gonna be at. And like, I mean, I've joked about that the past couple of years, how fucking all these gamer showcases depend on indie gamers as content. They'll show Tunic a million times over the past like 5 years, and that's like it's a big fucking thing. It's because you got nothing to show. It's only the indie guys are doing shit. Because they're making games. They're not selling fucking hardware. They're not selling fucking CG trailers. They have to make a game. If they don't make a fucking game, not only does their studio shut down, but their artistic souls, because they still have their souls, fucking shuts down. That's all we're going to have looking forward to. You know what? Fine by me, actually. Fine by me. Cheaper fucking $20 fucking indie games. Fucking sounds great. Honestly, sounds fucking delicious.
Where the economy going, it'll be $40.
Yeah, the inflation. Shrinkflation.
Yeah.
So we got 20 minutes left. Want to hit up the manga?
Can do. One Piece was...
We should discuss One Piece for the past couple weeks. Where are we at right now with One Piece?
One Piece is on chapter 1109.
It's 1109, but you should count 1108 as well. It's Dr. Vegapunk's big announcement.
Dr. Vegapunk is ostensibly dead. Unless they find some bullshit way to revive him. He is dead. He set his heart to some kind of timer to release.
His dead man switch, the same one tied to Pat McAfee, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, he's going to cancel the world government now.
Epstein Island documents are now being released in 10 minutes. Yeah. And so many people got mad about this. Like, oh my God, we have to wait 10 minutes. For me, I go, this is fucking sick. The role reversal of this, Val. Remember how in most anime, I mean, go back to Dragon Ball when Frieza's like, we have 5 minutes until the planet blows up. Now it's in the hero's hands. Now the villains have to rally to stop the heroes. The heroes have set the timer. That's so fucking cool.
I'm enjoying the tension. I am really looking forward to... I'm so surprised. I almost think that we're going to have the five-star elders either taken out or take a real fucking, like, you know, clapping. Hell, they might win, actually. Like, this is probably going to be a big event. I don't think everything is going to go the hero's way.
No, I told you before, I feel like we're due for a moment of Twilight of the Soul.
Yeah.
I feel like we are due for it. Like, what sets up the energy for the grand finale? Like, we have to hit one more low point. Go, oh, God. It's another day, Luffy. We got to do this. Like, I agree with you. I 110% agree that this... Like, it's called the Egghead Incident. It's not called the Egghead Straw Hat Victory. You know? It's something can go wrong here.
Mm-hmm. No, it's going to be... You know what? We've been saying it for a while. You've been saying it specifically. You think that we are, like, on the verge of greatness, like, occurring.
We are in the middle of that greatness right now. Since the Kuma flashback, this has been fucking peak. This feels like old piece. This feels like fucking the Blue Saga shit. This has been peak height shit. This has been awesome. What I feel like we are due right now at this moment is we need a hiccup. We need a Twilight of the Soul moment. We need things to go wrong for our heroes so that we can now get one more rally for the grand finale. If this truly is the end.
I agree.
It's not the end. Like, this, we still got like 5 years or more here. It's just like, again, we're discussing in narrative time that we are in the final saga. Like, right now, I feel like we are on the verge, if we're not already in the middle of, like, the equivalent of the Dark Deku saga. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, we need a Dark Deku point. Then we can get to the grand final arc, which is comprised of many, many arcs.
You mean like
I feel
one
like One
last,
Piece is going
like,
the same way.
kind of like one last Straw Hat separation or something?
Not necessarily a separation. If I could speculate right now, Vegapunk dies, the world government stops the broadcast, but I think our heroes get to hear it, but the rest of the world will not be able to.
I think a lot of Dirty Laundry is going to be, like, told to the world, and the world government is going to go full-on fascistic suppression of information mode for everyone. I think it is going to be a fucking field day for the people, essentially. The Five Star Elders, I think, to be honest. I actually think Luffy needs to be separated from the crew one last time.
You think so? I feel like if you separate from the crew, it's gonna be like all... I feel like you're gonna add 20 years to the fucking series if you do that.
I actually believe that for a while... I've thought this for a while. Luffy had some amazing development, I think, when he was first separated from the crew.
Oh, absolutely. Those are some of my favorite arcs.
Yeah.
Impel Down's awesome.
It's like Luffy
Marineford is incredible.
Luffy is a solo character, or maybe even with a small portion of his crew. I think Luffy almost needs to go on like a little like side tangent thing where it's like, you know, we're going to take care of this thing. Or he's forced into a scenario where
I cannot have the Straw Hats separate again.
It's bad enough
when they're together, they barely get screen time. We have to do it again? No fucking way. I can't do it.
Maybe not. Maybe
I don't got the heart to do this again.
I am probably stupid in saying this, but I...
They got separated in fucking...
I think a couple people could really use Wano. It, honestly. I think a couple people you could use it. I think I'll... Like, we've got probably... I don't know how many years we've got on this. I'm really unsure. Like, for all we know, dude, he could be like, it's happening, by the way. It's coming to an end. Oda's like, it's going to end, like, late next year. Like, Christmas next year or something.
No fucking way.
He could be like, that's how, like, big...
Fucking liar.
The fucking stakes are getting or something like that. I am so, like, not sure where this could go. I thought it was going to be like, oh, the Five Star Elders are going to be like the new big bads. But no, they're like summoning them all at once. It seems at least. That's how it seems.
I mean, I still think Emu is still a player. But I do think if the other stars are showing up right now, I honestly believe the stars die in this fight. And then we get the big reveal that Emu, like, you know how Vegapunk uses the other versions? He has multiple, his brains separated. I think the stars are Emu's brains separated.
That's an interesting
thing. I think they are pieces of Emu. And then they'll die in this fight and be like, oh yes, finally, the world government's been taking care of Emu. Goes, think again, motherfucker. Nope, those guys were just like my satellites. Nope.
Vegapunk, you thought you were the only one with access to satellite technology?
Yeah, like,
now,
you fucking idiot!
it's just a really interesting... I'm really excited for next week. This chapter really just sets a tone.
One Piece has been fucking... It's not been cooking, okay? Okay, my wife says that cooking is to taste, but baking is a science. Fucking Oda's been fucking baking, dude. He's baking! This has been great. No fucking notes. I have notes on your speculations, Val, but I've got no notes on what Oda's been doing.
Now, my thought is more that I think, like, Luffy as a character could probably use that, like, time alone. Even if it's only short. Not, like, a massively long time. Like, a mini arc alone or something. To really get some things across, I think, that we need to know about Luffy and about the world, maybe. I don't know. I'm actually, like, at a loss for what I want right now. And usually, you know me, I usually know what I want from One Piece. I'm probably not gonna get it, but, yeah, I'm just, like, damn, it's kind of like hitting home. Characters that we don't see for years at a time are coming in all of a sudden. This is fucking crazy, really. That's all I got, really. I don't know.
That's all you need right now. Yeah. So when I go to My Hero Academia, we should do 415 and 416.
My Hero Academia was interesting. It's interesting.
I mean, again, it's Deku. We're cleaning up this fight here. Deku's still fighting. The big thing was, okay, like, we need to recapture the energy of 415, because 415 ends with Eri rushing out, and our Discord, like, our Discord kind of runs, it's got the temperament of an old house cat, like, it, they speak once in a while, but Eri, like, rushing in that last, before the week break, just set the fucking server on fire. We were like, what the fuck? Eri comes to WinCon, she's gonna reset everything, and I go, I bet this is a fake out. I bet she just shows up just to remind people that she exists. She doesn't do much. Like, I feel like, I told you, like, weeks ago, I trust Horikoshi now. I don't trust his health, but I do trust his plan now. And this chapter completely, he explicitly writes the rules. He takes the massive reset button off the fucking table and goes, no, she has a certain amount of energy. She can't do that. She's like once at a time, like, it takes her, like, months to build that fucking energy. She can't do it. And it's like, yeah, she's not... This was a fake-out, which then really upset me. Like, the discourse this week on 416, it's like, what the fuck? It's like, we would have been pissed no matter what. If she'd shown up and stopped Shigaraki, we would have been so fucking pissed. Come on now, y'all. Come on. Don't act like we were gonna be happy no matter what.
I weirdly just like erase the headline and say, I got hit by a bus, don't worry about it.
Yeah, that was cool. That was my favorite part of this chapter. But this is like a plot to Horikoshi for his restraint, his discipline. He didn't do what we thought he would do. Some mangaka like Inagaki from Dr. Stone would probably shits on him, but they're all friends, but I say shits on him. But I say that, like, in a friendly, like, affectionate way, because he's given him shit in the past for changing the Bakugo. We all know Bakugo was supposed to be the second user, and Inagaki from Dr. Stone subtweeted him about that. They, hey, when people find out my twists, I don't change them. When they're so obvious. And it's just like, give Horikoshi some credit for his restraint, where, yeah, maybe it was originally planned for Eri to be the reset button, he's backing out now, but it's like, this man is historically backpedaled, but in the way he's doing it now, it looks like it looks less like backpedaling and more like restraint now. Like he's disciplined. Like he looks very mature for doing it now. I like it. I said in the Discord server, this week feels like a cleanup chapter. We're checking in on everyone. Okay, Eri and Kota are holding hands. Shippuden lover, My Hero Academia Shippuden lovers, speculators. Here you go. You got the two ones you ship with, you fucking creeps. We got Ochako being airlifted. We see Hawks lying on the ground with Tokoyami.
We have at least two more chapters of, like, getting a flash of every single
major. We see Momo and Denki walking out of the rubble from the class because they were running the big fucking fortress.
Yep.
They're walking away from the rubble.
I actually really like the bit with Denki. The bit where it's like, dude, I'm like, he's scared. He's like,
yeah.
I want to be able to believe in him. I'm fucking scared this isn't gonna work out. Does that make me shit?
And the fans would agree that you are fucking how dare you doubt Deku? How dare you? My face is getting red, tears streaming down my face. Don't doubt God. He's me. He's my fucking dream wish fulfillment. How dare you doubt him?
Why would Deku be anyone's wish fulfillment? That kid gets the shit kicked out of him all the time.
He is everyone's wish fulfillment. But no, but the fact that Denki's absolutely meaning, oh my god, I feel like such a piece of shit that I'm doubting Deku. Now the fans would be saying, you are a piece of shit! You're doubting Deku! It's like, yeah, he just said that. Just like I just said I was wrong about Deku, and then people screamed at me in the YouTube comments I was wrong about Deku. It was like, bitch, I fucking know. I know, that's what I'm talking about. You're not listening. You're just mad because someone's doubting Deku right now.
Don't worry, fans. I've always liked Deku.
I love Deku. I've always loved Deku, but I've always had a lot of problems with him. With the way the editors won't allow the Horikoshi to present him. The way they get to present him now, it's incredible. But yeah, the biggest thing now is this week's stinger, where Deku, in the middle of a punch, appears in front of Shigaraki Tenko's house. And someone in the Discord server made the worst speculation, and worse in a way that I'm like, oh my god, they're so right.
The best speculation.
The best, worst speculation ever. They went, oh my god, this is how we find out how All for One is involved in Tenko's flashback. No, he's so right. Just because you're right doesn't mean you're correct. Or just because you're correct doesn't mean you're right. How dare you say that? How dare you be so correct? Oh my gosh. We're gonna see All for One. The man has finally been dead for a couple months now, and we have to bring his ass back now? Please, God, no!
God,
I can't deal with more ethereal All for One.
He is dead, isn't he?
He's dead, but he's gonna live in the memories now. He's coming back.
He's a vestige.
If you're a stockhold shareholder, to those who have been holding on to their All for One stock, continue to hold, motherfuckers. Diamond hands on All for One right now, because he's coming back.
Oh God, is this gonna be the true final fight with All for One then?
Oh my God, this is Deku's chance to fight All for One. Deku's gonna punch All for One. This is how he gets his shot.
Deku has baby. Okay.
This is my wish fulfillment.
Deku has his final fight.
I'm tired of his ass.
Deku has his final fucking fight with All for One. Val's prediction, and baby Tenko and baby Midoriya are going to both punch him in the face.
They're gonna beat the shit out of him. I'm so happy. This is my wish fulfillment. Bring him back. Don't let him get off that easily. Bring back All for One from the dead and beat the shit out of him again for being so fucking basic at the finish line.
Yeah, smash his head in that fucking drawer where Tenko's dad kept the picture of his mom or something.
Though, to be fair, remember, with the last time we spoke about All for One, I did compliment Horikoshi for making lemons out of lemonade and the fact that, you know, dude, we both loved it. Yeah, the fact that he was so evil, even as a fucking sperm. He was the most evil sperm ever. He literally strangled other sperm heads with his sperm tail.
And his father doesn't even matter.
He was immaculately fucking conceived by fucking Satan. Like, let's not pretend like we didn't enjoy that. I enjoyed it, okay?
No, so dude, I even said I was loving it. I didn't.
It was awesome.
Realize.
It was fucking awesome. I was like, okay, I get it now. That was where Horikoshi was baking. We get it. Like, we get it, man.
I literally forgot that I was reading My Hero Academia at one point because it was so like, what the fuck? This is such a tonal whiplash of what I'm used to. Holy crap! I loved it. He actually made it fun. He made it fun. He was like, yes, this is the most evil guy ever.
You are absolutely right to laugh at this. This man is comically fucking evil. It's both funny and fucking badass how fucking evil this man is.
We got a little bit of time. You want to talk about Chainsaw Man?
No, we don't talk about Chainsaw Man anymore. What are you talking about? He's dead to me. Chainsaw Man who?
It's still boring, I'll say that much. That's all I feel. I'm just like,
I don't think it's boring. I think what's going on is actually very interesting.
His ass is back. I don't know. I'm just like, it all just still feels like, I don't know. I'm just not, what the fuck is with me? I literally like dick-rode this from from like the initial release. And now for some reason, I can't
for me, it's
get
like the
ounce
quality.
Of joy.
Yeah, like I didn't realize it until someone started showing me like pages from part one. The overall quality has fucking plummeted, and that makes me bitter. Chainsaw Man Part 2 isn't bad, but week to week and overall, it is so fucking frustrating and disappointing when you realize how much we have lost in quality, and how frustrating week to week, hardly anything is happening. And the fact that the man's improvising, and this is the time where the improvising isn't working. But right now, in the current chapters, with Asa finally returning, I will say I am having fun again. I'm saying. I cannot warrant this fucking carousel conversation with Chainsaw Man. I can't keep coming back and saying how bored and frustrated I am with Chainsaw Man. I can't keep doing this weekly. And that's why I don't want to talk about it.
That's fair. I am sad. I am just sad that I just have not enjoyed something.
Exactly.
That I unabashedly
and that's why.
Loved for so fucking
if you
long.
Guys are, if our listeners are still enjoying Chainsaw Man,
good
great,
for you.
Awesome, happy for you. The only reason why we're not bringing it up on the podcast anymore and why we're trying to avoid it right now is it doesn't make us happy anymore. We're not going to talk about something if it makes us this fucking miserable.
I will still read it week to week.
I'm addicted, man. I can't quit it. But like, I'm not fucking like. It's not like in the past where when I was working at the hospital and I would literally take a shit break at like 10 o'clock in the morning and sit there for 20 minutes and comb over it. Now it's like Friday. I'm like, oh yeah, Chainsaw Man came out. I'll take a look. That's where I'm at right now.
Do you remember when we used to get
that's where my barometer is.
Remember when we used to get little pochitas like all fucked up and everything, or like at the bottom of the page.
I mean, that was for the volumes. That's for the volumes.
It's just, I don't know.
I just want something. I want.
But yeah,
I
want but that charm is gone. Yeah, again, because that's part. That's some of those little things that get lost in the quality loss that is happening.
What do we do? What do we do when something cool does happen?
Now they're now his interns are fucking photoshopping photorealistic guns inside. Because now he has like 20 fucking people helping, which is nice. But it's like I would rather he gets to do this like every other week, so that both him and his interns get to, you know, work on the quality. And he gets to, you know, think like more than 5 minutes about the script. That would be nice. Mm. I feel bad for him. That's who I feel worse for is Fujimoto, because I know that when this man gets time, this man is the king. This man is the bake king. All right, in the modern day.
He is awesome. No,
his one shots are fucking incredible because he gets time to work on those.
He has
like what was it? Listen to the Song was a fucking shit post, and it was fucking incredible because he got to think about it for more than 5 minutes.
It's
he got to think for 6 minutes, and it was that fucking good.
Come dunk on us if like you know shit gets awesome again, and like I don't know.
Yeah, please do. Oh yeah, please. Do not. Please tell me that when it's genuinely fucking great, because you'll know, and we'll all know. Please come dunk on us. Because right now it's not. Don't fucking fool yourselves. That it is getting better. It's an improvement, but it's not by much. Don't fool yourselves. You demand better. And how do you demand better? Tell them, tell fucking Shueisha that we want this man to take at least like 2 weeks to fucking bake. Because we know he's capable of it.
Tell me, but don't spoil me, because like I want something to be exciting.
It's impossible with these guys.
I feel like that is where it's started. That one day, I came back and I was like, Ivan, they literally spoiled the whole, like, ending joke for the entire fucking chapter for me. And it's just been a downward spiral. I mean, I was already, like, feeling some, like...
I remember. We'll go listen back to that episode, alright?
Yeah, yeah.
Val versus the Chainsaw Man fans. But we need to go. We need to go, because speaking of baking and
we've
cooking...
We've got shit to do.
I am fucking starving, and I have a long day recording ahead of me. So
I've got
I need
places
to fucking
to
refill.
Too. Adios.
Adios, everyone. Rip Toriyama, rip Rooster Teeth. Thank you to both the man in those institutions for absolutely fucking destroying my mind and ruining my life in the best way possible. I wouldn't be here without them. Love them. Love them to eternity. Everyone, and you guys listening, and everyone, like, just we love so much love, so much passion, even when we're fucking shitting on Chainsaw Man. Love, 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 love. Love you all. See you soon. Bye-bye. Hey there, Leroy again. You can tell I got lunch. I'm not starving anymore. But I had to record this at the very end because I was talking about... Hold on. I'm eating mushroom stroganoff, by the way. Pragmata, I said that was delayed indefinitely, and we've never gotten any gameplay. Well, I finally watched the trailer, and wouldn't you know, there's gameplay. And they announced in that trailer... that they have delayed the game indefinitely to make sure that it gets done right. To which I say, good. Delay it forever then. Delay it for another 10 years. I'll wait for it. That's all I want to say, because I was clamoring about how, oh, they just made a trailer and they didn't actually have a game. And then I was talking about how, oh, if they gave Fujimoto more time, he'd make a great thing. And well, here we go. The thing I want is being delayed to make it great. That's what I want. So I just want to make sure that was established at the very end there, that this is a very good, happy thing. But if there's anything else I'm wrong about, yeah, please dunk me in the Discord server, which is available in the link below wherever you're listening to. Anyway, thanks again. Bye.
Mind the gap as you exit our podcast safely. Rebuild of Joycast is hosted by Ivan Leroy and Valentine Stokes. Leroy's written and directed works can be found on the Joyride Entertainment YouTube channel. Val's dulcet tones can be heard in many of your favorite anime and web series, such as Ruby, Lackadaisy, Gunbuster, Death Battle, and more. Audio engineering by Stina Carey. Music provided by Lo-Fi Geek. Intro and outro narration by Stina Carey. Outro music composed by Michael Payovich. Logo and visuals designed by Ivan Leroy. Keep the conversation going by visiting Joyride's public Discord server, where you can discuss this week's topics and more. Patreon donors also get access to our weekly anime watch club with cast and crew. Links provided in the description. Rebuild of Joycast is produced by Joyride Entertainment and Rock Voice Productions, LLC, and made possible thanks to Patreon donations from generous listeners like you. Thank you for keeping Joyride's engine burning.